What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. How are y'all doing? It's Monday. Is everybody awake? Everybody awake?
Super awake.
Got some coffee. I'm ready.
Great, great. Well, it's been a great week. I'm excited. It's pretty darn warm here in the Chicagoland area. Record temps all week in the 60s. So a lot of outdoors stuff going on. We spent a lot of time outside, as I'm sure a lot of people in this area did. I even went on a bike ride, which is really good. I felt good.
You guys all stretched out,
ready for good about me.
My legs are very sore, and but yeah, I had a good time. I was celebrating my birthday with my family, and we all were hanging around outside. It was a good time.
It was your birthday too. Happy birthday!
Yeah, it's a lot of birthdays. A lot of birthdays.
Happy birthday, man!
Thanks, man. So yeah, that was fun. Chris, what did you do this week? I know you had a pretty exciting weekend.
Yeah. And I was even tweeting out, keeping everybody concerned, keeping on the toes. I went on my first ski trip ever. So, some Chicago people organized kind of a motion graphics themed ski trip. So I headed up to Wisconsin and hit up a couple of different slopes. Literally never worn skis in my life, and it's even worse than that because I don't even really know how to skate and anything like along those lines at all. So I was pretty convinced I was going to hurt myself pretty badly, but it was more fun than I thought it would be, and I learned faster than I thought I would. I fell down like 8 times, and only one of those did I like kind of hurt myself a little bit. I somehow hit my chin, and I think it like hit my brain a little bit because I don't exactly remember how I fell, but it doesn't seem to hurt. But super quick, I'll tell one little story. There's me and another guy. We're the two newbies, and we were going up the first time ever wearing skis, going up a ski lift for the first time ever, and I didn't know how to dismount. So I immediately fell off the thing. When we get to the end of the, you know, it goes up to the top, you have to dismount. I didn't know how to do that, so I fell off the thing, and then my own seat hits me in the back of the head. And then the other guy immediately skied off and got tangled in the fencing. And they had to like remove the fencing to get him out of it. So like that was that the whole trip improved from there. So it was like set a nice low bar, and I got to, you know, get better and better.
Did they have to cut him out of the fence, you know, because of those?
No, they just had to like pull it off the poles so they could but yeah, it was super fun. I'm super achy, but I didn't hurt anything.
That's good, man. I was worried about you because I know so many people that have hurt themselves lately, and it's a lot of, you know, as you get older, if you damage like your wrist, it's like surgeries and all this stuff. So I'm glad you made it okay.
Yeah. And how about you, Nick?
So I would have been there skiing with you, buddy, but I am currently in the middle of my road trip / ski trip / work trip that I do every year. So I'm in Denver. In fact, I got to show off the mountains here. Check this out.
I was insisting that Nick show this off, everybody.
But I can't really see it, but hopefully you guys
can. Yeah, no, you got it.
So that is where I'll be as soon as the podcast ends. I got to grab my charger. Snowed about 4 inches last night. So I'm excited to get out there today and get some skiing going. But the road trip's been good. I was at, where was I? 2 days ago, I was in Winter Park skiing and racing. They had NASTAR over there. And then the last couple days, I've just been working here in the hotel room. And prepping for, you know, some stuff that we're working on and some other projects I'm working on. And then I'm off to Salt Lake City tomorrow. I drive out there and meet up with some friends out there as well. But I wanted to tell you guys about the mostly thank everybody for the Denver. I always get the name mixed up. It's the Colorado C4D meetup that EJ put on. And that was last Thursday. So I just want to say hi to everybody that showed up to that and ask questions. I didn't know the market and like the group out there was so big. There was like 100 people that signed up to show up to this thing. And I think almost over 90 people showed up to this awesome brewery in Denver downtown. And it was a really cool meetup. EJ put it on and I did a little talk. A talk I've never done before, and got a lot of awesome Q&A from everybody in the crowd, like another hour of Q&A. So just want to say thanks to EJ, everybody that showed up at the event. And then also to Ryan at Spilt, because we saw his studio the next day. It was really cool to see other studios in other towns. And he kind of gave us a tour of his place and also took us out to lunch. So, dude, Denver. Not only is everybody moving here for for, you know, other reasons, but also for, it sounds like, for work as well.
That's cool, man.
It's an awesome town, man. I really enjoyed meeting everybody and drinking all their beer. That was extra fun.
Yeah, it seems like a cool place. There are quite a few people I know that are looking to move there or have already moved there. It seems like it's blowing up. I'm sure the property prices are now going to start going through the roof. But
I have heard that the prices are up, and there's kind of a, like, we've been here a long time kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at the new people like, hey, you know, what are you doing? But that's any new town. That's any town that's growing. There's going to be a lot of people show up. So it's just exciting to see. And I'm excited to get back next year, hopefully, on this trip. I'll be back in Denver. So I'm maybe plan a couple more. Salt Lake? I don't know. Where else is there? Is there one in Kansas?
I have no idea. I guess we'll find out. Hit us in the comments if you have a group that you want Nick to go see. As long as there's something for Nick to do, he'll come out.
That's right.
As long as there's a mountain.
Or even a hill would probably work.
Hills are fine. Hey, I live in the Midwest, man. I'm okay with hills.
Yeah, well, that's all we got out here. So what's going on in GSG news? We've got had our tutorial out last week, which was basically,
right?
Yeah, it was Nick. You covered displacement, and then you did a follow-up tutorial, which we put out about your kind of post process for doing your dailies and stuff in Photoshop, and kind of snuck out a little bit about our upcoming tool, the LUT tool that we've got coming out, which you'll hear more about that in a few weeks, but
yeah,
in the coming weeks.
Sorry, Chad. I just want to say thanks to everybody that let me know, which I didn't know at all, that if you do sub-poly displacement, there's now a way to view it in the viewport without hitting render. I didn't even know that was a feature. I'm always surprised. Like, new stuff sneaks out with Cinema 4D like that all the time, and I'm always distracted looking at, like, all the shatter tools or fracture and all that. And then there's always these other things that are so useful that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm sure that's a thing. But I always forget about it. So thanks everybody for letting me know about that. And it was kind of an update to an old, you know, Grayscale Grill has been around enough now where these older tutorials from 2009, 2010 are still relevant. Like, new people that are learning Cinema 4D still need to learn those things. But the interface has changed enough now, and some of the new technology has been added to where they're becoming almost out of date. And it's something we really never had to worry about at Grayscale Gorilla, because Cinema 4D was so good about leaving older things alone, and just, they always worked. But now it's not even just that old stuff is broken. It's that there's newer techniques that might speed up your workflow. And that's what we're all about here. So I started looking at some of our older, more popular tutorials and thinking, like, how can we update them, make them better, make them look better. Their renders are better now. So anyway, keep an eye out for those. And then the color correction one was something I get asked all the time, specifically because they see the final render that comes out of Cinema, and then they see the final piece that I put on Instagram, and they're like, well, what did you do in between there? There's a lot missing. Like, your render looked okay, but then there's all this extra stuff that you added in post. And I think I haven't been as good as I'd like to about sharing some of that stuff. So I'm definitely going to be doing more of that. And also, like you said, Chad, with LUTs, that's something that, you know, I didn't know about until only a couple years ago. And now I'm adding it more and more into my workflow. So I'm excited about that as well.
Yeah, that was a fun one. And that, I think, you know, is good for people to go. If you haven't seen it, check it out. We'll throw it in the show notes. Because it's, even if you've seen the displacement tutorials or whatnot, check out the one that Nick was just talking about, which kind of goes over a little bit of his post process, because everybody approaches that differently. And I think that's a really interesting thing. And Chris, before the show, had a great idea about trying to throw together a slew of tutorials where, you know, maybe we give a couple of our favorite artists the same render and see what they do to it in post. I thought that was a cool idea. And just kind of see, because Chris was mentioning that, you know, everybody has a different approach, and just by watching somebody navigate Photoshop or After Effects or whatever, you can come up with a new idea to your own approach and maybe a better way to do, what was it you said, the two-click vignette or whatever?
Well, it is, yeah, arbitrary example, but, you know, all sorts of shortcuts are just quick techniques where you're like, I didn't know that was in that menu. I was doing it this manual way.
Right, yeah. Now, that's especially with Photoshop, I feel like I'm in there so much, but I never really watch Photoshop tutorials, that I bet I could learn a lot just by watching a few and like cut my clicks down probably in half if I actually took the time to watch them.
See, that's one of those pieces of software that they've updated and added all these really cool features to, but I haven't went out and actively found out what those things are, because almost everything I do, I can do with stuff that I learned 10 years ago in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. But they've actively, you know, tried to make that stuff faster, like how to even just do masks and all those things. And every time they do, I feel like I'm a ding dong for not learning all the new stuff that it does. So that's something I definitely want to learn more about.
I think you get into a rut, you know, like when you, even in cinema too, like if you're used to doing the same thing, like maybe your job, you're only touching, you know, 10 tools or something, you can just easily get into this rut where you, it's not a rut really. It's, if it's the way you work, it's the way you work. But yeah, once in a while you kind of have to step out and be like, is there a better way? Is there a faster way to do this, what I'm doing right now? And for Photoshop, for me, what helped me kind of push myself in that area is GSG stuff, because not, you know, generating a lot of different versions of banners and images for the site and all that. And even, you know, creating texture maps and whatnot. I tried to find ways of like automating my workflow in Photoshop using batch and using droplets and like trying to figure out what's going on there. And then the whole, what do they call this, smart? Is it smart layers or?
Oh, smart layers. Those are
amazing. Oh, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that, just that kind of stuff, like trying to stay on top of what they're doing is hard because, you know, there's so much going on in the Adobe world. But yeah, if you just kind of take a step, maybe take one day and just look at what you're doing and be like, is there a newer feature that could make this easier? That would be awesome.
Well, it used to be, I did all my still stuff and even my photography early on, I did it all in After Effects because I didn't know Photoshop as well, but mostly After Effects was procedurally made. Like all their effects mm-hmm. were not applied to pixels. They were like live layers on top of other things. And Photoshop was a lot more brute force, just like we're going to apply this to all the pixels at the same time, back then at least. So I kind of like pushed away, but consistently Photoshop's been adding these ways to keep things live. Smart mm-hmm. layers is one of them. Keeping like smart layers allow you to rescale it up and down all you want and never lose quality. Mm-hmm. And also they also work as pre-comps, which is one of the reasons I loved After Effects, the ability to take one piece and then use it multiple times over your project. So every time I learn that stuff, I'm like, well, no duh, it's in Photoshop now, but I just don't use it. And then I got to like remind myself that it's there. So
I think I've always done boards. Whenever I'm doing boards, I'm always doing it in After Effects or Fusion, because I feel like just for those reasons, like Photoshop is so destructive that, I mean, it's less destructive now than it used to be, but I always like to keep the fact that, first of all, Photoshop needs to have spline masks that are live. Like why it doesn't have that is just like unreal to me. Cause that's a huge thing. Like, you know, you want to make a mat in Photoshop and your mat is rasterized and it's there and that's your mat. And it's like, that sucks. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely gotten better, like being able to link out to other files in your project and swap out those files. And yeah, it's definitely cool. But anyway,
well, what else going on, around, should we do a Render Wars update?
Oh yes,
Render
today
Wars.
In the Render Wars. So what's going on in Render Wars? Octane 3.06 announced, which a lot of people are very happy about. It's going to start to roll. I'm not sure if I think you can actually get it for Cinema now, but the standalone is definitely updated. The Cinema 4D version, by the time you hear this, it might be out. The big thing there is they're starting to include adaptive sampling in Octane, which is I'm not going to pretend to know all the details on that. You should go research it if you're interested in this. But what that means is that you're going to finally be able to tell Octane where to spend more of its time thinking. In terms of the quality of the image, with adaptive sampling, you can give it a threshold so that it's going to work harder on the areas of the frame that are more grainy, which is a great update. I think what would be greater would be actually some useful features like light linking, which it still cannot do, which is mind blowing to me. Still can't do custom AOV passes. There's a lot of people are angry that Octane continues to be updated, but without making any real, that sounds a little harsh. It's being updated, but not in the ways that I think a lot of production artists wish it were being updated, and not at the speed in which I think they would like it to be updated. So there's that. What else is going on? I've been playing a lot with Redshift, which I think is a fantastic renderer. I'm very excited about that coming out. I think a lot of people have jumped on the alpha because they've got a really pretty open alpha program. I think you just have to go to their forum and maybe sign a few things and just kind of, they're pretty open about it. As far as I know, not very many people have been denied access to the alpha. And that's a really unique renderer because it's kind of like, and I tweeted this out, it's kind of like if Octane and V-Ray had a baby, that would be what Redshift is. Because it's a very, it's an affordable, fast GPU rendering option. And they're really good about the updates. Like on the alpha, I've seen several updates in the last couple, 3-4 weeks, which is really good. So that's a good pace of updates. And I'm excited about where that's headed. I really like the look of it a lot. It's got a very clean look. It's not tied. What I like about it is that it doesn't have tune rendering or anything like that, but it's very much a versatile renderer, meaning that it can look like Octane or it can look a little bit more stylized if that's what you want to do with it. It's cool, and I'm excited to see where it heads, where it goes. What else is going on in the Render Wars? I feel like I'm forgetting something.
There's so much going
on. I know, dude, it's insane.
Here's what I'd like to ask too. And I asked this at the meetup in Colorado, and it seems like it's still kind of 50-50. About 50% of the crowd, at least that showed up, was still in physical standard render world, and about half moved to third party stuff. So it's always interesting to me on how that trend is going and who's using what. So, you know, maybe this is a good episode to drop some literal stuff in the comments, letting us know what you're using or what you're digging these days, especially if you're experimenting with a lot of these. I know a lot of you out there are playing around with it like Chad is, and figuring out like, where's the future of this going? So if you guys have any, updates or something else happened this week that we forgot, drop it in the comments, man. We'd be getting a lot of really good questions and discussions going on down there. So love to hear from you guys.
Definitely. I think also too, I did forget to mention that, you know, we talked a bit about the price, the difference, the Arnold licensing changes. They said they were going to update people with a new pricing announcement because they got rid of the node lock license, which kind of forces a lot of people to get the floating license, which is more expensive. And they said, don't worry, we're going to announce soon an option that's going to be affordable to the freelancer and the small studio. So we're still waiting on that. Hopefully that'll be announced soon. But yeah, the only other thing that's kind of semi-related that I'll drop is, and this is going to, I don't want to spend too much time on it because it gets into a little bit of a hardware rabbit hole. I'm curious to know what everybody's thinking about AMD. I personally do not like AMD graphics cards, and I've never bought a machine with AMD processors. But I think Intel has slowed down its development of fast CPUs because they just don't see the market for it. And I think AMD is saying, well, hey, you know, here's an area we can fill. Gamers need higher end CPUs. Pros need higher end CPUs. They're starting to release really cheap high end CPUs. And I'm curious to know what everybody thinks about that. I think some Cinebench scores have been released about how they perform. They've been leaked out, and they're as good according to the Cinebench scores as some of the Intel processors that are, similar, but they're like half the price or some ridiculous, like they're so cheap. So I'm curious to know if anybody out there knows anything about these Ryzen chips that are starting to be talked about and what you think about them. Do you think that 3D artists are going to start to use those as opposed to Intel chips, and hear what people are doing?
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that one other than competition's always going to be good for for the artists, you know?
Exactly. And I just want to see, you know, the type of, I mean, think about graphics cards and how far they've come and how powerful they've become. And we kind of saw this happening with Intel chips in the mid, you know, maybe 2005 to 2009. Like they were kind of going at a really good clip, and now they kind of have peaked almost. They're not really developing super fast. They're not really making the same sorts of leaps that they were before. So I'm curious to see where that's headed. And if GPUs are going to become the standard, then what will happen to the CPU and all that sort of jazz. But for another podcast, perhaps. Let's
in
talk.
My day, we had 12 CPUs in the computer.
Yeah. So we talked about the topic today, and we kind of agreed that we were going to talk today about our process, our morning, specifically our morning process, and discuss how do we start our day? How do we get our day going to become productive members of Grayscale Gorilla, or just, you know, artists in general? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And I want to encourage everybody listening to drop us a line in the comments and tell us about your process and what you do and how you operate. How do you get out of bed? Is it, you know, a coffee? Is it, I don't know.
If you'll let me, I want to speak
just a second
about why I think this is important. I think if people are like, why are you talking about what kind of coffee you're drinking? For me, I get the question a lot of, and we get this question a lot of, like, how do you stay creative, and how are you inspired? Like, what makes you inspired in the world? And I think I touched on this last time we tried to answer that question. And for me, that question isn't necessarily what websites do you go to like be inspired. For me, inspiration is about setting up your life and your body and your environment up in a way that lets you get your best work done. And for me, the morning routine is such a simple way to experiment with that and just literally change the way you wake up in the world and then track. I see it like a science experiment, one that I've been playing with for a long time of, if I do this in the morning, do I feel better by the afternoon? And I think some of this stuff works. So I think that this is a really fun topic for me, at least. And I just wanted to set that up for people going like, are we going to talk about toothpaste?
Because if we are, I am so down.
Because if so, I think that's the next podcast we're starting.
Yep.
Oh.
It's toothpaste, we're gonna call
wars. Toothpaste wars.
The cavity creeps. Remember the cavity creeps? No? Okay. I'm alone in that. All right. So who wants to start? Who wants to tell us about their morning routine? What do they do to get going? Chris, you want to start us off?
Well, I think maybe you should start out, Chad, because I think you might have like the most maybe average one. Because mine's a little weird, and I think Nick's might be a little weird.
I'm a little offended by that.
You're the most normal, but I don't know that for sure.
No, I am. I'm super boring, actually. My morning routine, I work from home now, so it's really not that exciting. I usually, get up, have a coffee, and chill out, see the kids off to school, and then, you know, start playing music. For me, music is a huge part of getting my mind ready to kind of jump in and get excited about what I'm working on. So I'm usually, one of my favorite things is I have a JBL Flip Bluetooth speaker that kind of walks around the upstairs with me when I'm going from room to room getting ready for the morning.
What does that mean? It's like in your pocket?
No, I just carry it. It's like a portable Bluetooth speaker.
That's cool.
And I just like, you know, literally will have it, you know, when I'm showering. My entire morning routine is just me on my phone in the morning with my coffee, checking the news, checking all my phone. So let's go through the real routine. My real routine is literally me waking up, going to my phone, because I'm a bit of an addict when it comes to that. And I'm checking all of the forums, all of my Slack stuff, and I'm on a bunch of betas, and I'm talking to all these people from different time zones, so I'm catching up with all those people, and I'm checking my email and all that, having my coffee, come upstairs, start playing music really loud, jump in the shower, and then, yeah, walk down the hall into the office. I do like to make sure that every day I start off with a clean desk, because I don't, a semi-clean, I guess. And that way, like, an uncluttered desk is an uncluttered mind for me. So that's I like to make sure that my desk is not in disarray, because it stresses me out. I just have this weird thing with that. And then the dog follows me up usually, and he comes in and he lays down. And I cue up my Hue lights to the correct work temperature. And I start cranking, man. The music's always on, noise canceling headphones on. I can't hear a thing going on. My kids are probably screaming. I have no idea. That's me. And usually it's like Slack is the first thing I'm opening up to make sure nothing's going on that I need to take care of. Then I jump right into GSG stuff and working on all my stuff. So yeah, I guess it's pretty standard.
That sounds like you're not too strict about food, like your food in the morning, or your like showers or anything like that. Are you just like straight to work and then you'll figure that stuff out later, or
I don't know. I get up, I go downstairs, have a coffee, chill out, you know, check the on my phone, doing whatever, and then I'll eat breakfast right before I head up, you know, to shower. And so it's just a bowl. I'm a cereal guy, like always been like a huge cereal eater. And so I'll just have a bowl of cereal before I head up and start my day. And and you know, now in the summer, I'll go for a bike ride to, like, you know, right after the kids get on the bus, Tracy and I will hit the trails and ride our bikes. But in the winter, it's kind of like sometimes we walk, sometimes we don't. Sometimes I don't do anything. Sometimes I run. So it's kind of all over the map. But yeah, but when I come upstairs for work, the door shuts and everybody knows that I'm off limits. So then that's kind of how it goes. Nothing too crazy.
No, I think there's a lot there though that you set up. Like, in particular, your space is your workspace, I think, is really important. I got a lot of those questions from the Colorado crew when I was out there about like working at home and work-life balance and those kind of things. And I think the fact that you said that even mentally, that this is your space and it's kind of like you're off limits, is even just for your brain, it seems like really helpful. Am I making that up? No,
you're right. In fact, one guy, I think it was, maybe been on YouTube or something. He was like, he hit me up and he was like, what did he say? He's like, how do you deal with your kids at home on your computer, like if they get on it and mess it up? And I'm like, they're not allowed on my computer. And that was like such a foreign concept to me, to have my kids touching my computer, that it really kind of struck me. It was like, wait, do people do that? Like, I would never let my kids touch my computer. And so I wrote him back and I'm like, well, I don't let my kids touch my computer. That's rule number one. And rule number two is they can't come into my office unless unless I'm in here, or unless they've come in here to grab something and you know, whatever. But yeah, I'm really strict about that, because I see my computer at work, or sorry, in my office here at home, and my office as the same as if like I were a doctor or a mechanic or whatever. I used to have friends growing up who had mechanics. Their dads were mechanics, and they would just be we'd be you know, wanting to work on our skateboards or whatever, and they'd be like, okay, we can work on our skateboards, but you can't touch my dad's tools. Like, don't touch my dad's tools; he'll freak out. And everything was like, you know, they'd have their dads that had all the tools hung up in the most perfect place, and that really kind of, I guess, is how I approach my computer at home. It's like, these are my tools. This is how I put a roof over your head. This is how I feed you. Like, don't mess with this stuff. This is not a toy. And like, I think that if you set those boundaries early on and your computer is in a separate space, and you kind of say this, you don't touch this stuff. This is not a toy. You don't put your games on here. You're not allowed to touch it. Then you basically kind of set the ground rule right there, that you don't ever have to worry about them accidentally deleting something or getting on and screwing up a setting. Or maybe I'm just a jerk, I don't know.
I think that makes sense.
And there's even just on that computer level, there's always that thing of like, you know, you've used it 100 times, you do it again and again and again, and then the one time somebody sits behind the computer and the hard drive dies, like you want to blame them, and maybe they did something, maybe they kicked the computer by accident or something and they broke it. And it's like, listen, I've done this 1,000 times. Why did it break the first time you sat behind it? And if you just remove that as a variable, then you're like, okay, I know all these variables. I know what I've done. I know what probably went wrong. Right. As soon as somebody else touches it, it's like, like, was it you? Was it the hard drive? Like, did something get jiggled? Like, I wasn't in control this time.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of me and my mom's situation. It never works until I show up.
Yeah, that, I mean, I kind of learned that early on, because I feel like if you're doing what we're doing and it's so specialized and you're spending all of this money on this machine, or, you know, maybe it's a laptop that you bring with you or whatever, I just don't want to ever risk that. I don't want to come in. I don't feel comfortable. Like, it'd be like a race car driver having, you know, his brother or something under the hood messing around with the car, and you're like, I gotta drive that next week in a race, and like, I don't know what you did to it.
Yeah, you're not allowed to drive the race car to go grab milk at the grocery store.
Yeah, totally, man. And so, like, I don't know, I just have always kind of been that way, but I do make sure, and I know this is a, you know, a luxury, that I have a computer for work, and then we have a separate computer for family, that a lot of people don't have that luxury. And to those people, if you have to have your computer that you're doing 3D on at home, whether you're a freelancer or maybe you're, you know, a independent artist, whatever, then give them a login, a separate login. Don't let them use your login. So try to, if you have to share your computer, just try to be as safe about it as you can, and just give them their own login that they can't mess anything up for you. That's what I would do. I mean, I kind of wish I had done that with all the family stuff. Like I don't think iPads can do separate logins though. That would be cool if they could, because that would be a heck of a lot easier. Anyway, that's me. Who wants to talk about their stuff next?
I'll go next, because I think Nick's going to have like the most insightful stuff, maybe, or he thinks about it the most, so we'll save him for last.
Yeah, I don't know if it's too insightful, but I sure obsess over it. That's for sure.
Yeah. So on my part, I always try and optimize things to like remove friction, to like just like squeeze out all the minutes in the day that you can. And like, my morning routine was effectively to remove as much of a morning routine as I can. And so some of the questions I'll have for you guys after we come back around is going to be, you know, what am I missing by doing this? So for me, I typically shower the night before. So I go to bed and I just kind of wake up and I'm like kind of ready to go. But I don't eat breakfast, and I don't have any kind of fancy morning routine. Like, so for me, I wake up and within 10 minutes, I'm like out the door. If I was like driving to a job, like back when we were at bomb camp, like 10 minutes from in bed, I am in the car driving. Like, there was no breakfast. There was no like checking emails, or was no setup or cleanup or anything. It's like, get up, you know, hit the bathroom, get dressed, get ready, out the door, done. And it's even, I'm working from home now, but it's still the same routine where it's like, within 10 minutes, like, I've woken up, gotten ready, and, you know, and I work with my brothers here for doing code stuff. So they arrive and then we go for a walk, and then we arrive an hour. So I guess you can add in for the routine, I have my, we go for a walk. So we need, because when we work from home, I think it's very important to distinguish home time from work time. So I have 2 desks, 2 computers, like 2 different rooms that I do these things in. So they don't get intermingled, with the exception of these podcasts, but that's just such an isolated thing that I don't really feel like that crosses over. And it's really important to me to be like, okay, we wake up and we go to work, which is like just walking around the neighborhood, and then we come back and now we're at work. So it's kind of like just putting yourself in the mental headspace of that. And I think that's really valuable. Where if I were to wake up, roll out of bed, you know, put on slippers and then start working, like, you're not working. If you go and you go, like, so I guess for me, the routine is like, I had to be presentable to the world. So, you know, I had to put on pants and shoes and, you know, comb my hair. And now you go for that walk and now you're back and you've started your day. So that is, I guess that's the minimum, but all that happens within 10 minutes. But I am forcing myself to distinguish between work and home.
Do you walk in a different door when you come back? Because you do like an office door in the back.
Oh, I didn't think about that, but we could do that. We always go walk out the front and in the back or something.
Yeah.
So what do you guys talk about on your walks? I mean, I think that's the your routine sounds pretty, you know, it's minimal. I disagree about breakfast. I think it's an important meal that you shouldn't skip. But that's your life. But what do you guys talk about on this walk? Because is that a way for you guys? Are you talking about work or do you just like are just walking?
It is very rarely work. Honestly, we talk about everything. It's all over the place. I mean, there's catch up on the weekends and what everybody's been up to. And we spend a bunch of time talking about video games and the things we have in common. But we talk about, you know, like big inappropriate topics for like general consumption of like, you know, like where we're all over the place as far as like politics and, you know, like societal norms and this and that and like things I don't even want to bring up because I don't want to deal with the responses. But we talk about kind of everything. And because, you know, first of all, we're all brothers and we're pretty similar. So we really get into like the nitty gritty, tiny little details of it. And Nick knows a little bit of this because the same stuff we used to talk about during ping pong. It's once again, not stuff I'm going to repeat it for general consumption because, you know, essentially in a room with other people who we could talk about these things and not get offended. But you defend if you talk to this kind of stuff with a random person at a bar, you're going to offend them.
I love that you guys talk about, complicated, nuanced topics, and you're not just even arguing like this side versus this side. You're like you guys get down to the detail of like this detail of this side, and it's such an interesting way that you guys communicate. I love listening to you guys. I love being like a fly on the wall sometimes when you guys are talking.
to bring up like a subtle or a nuanced topic that isn't controversial, we were talking about what is art one day. I did this back at Bomb Camp. It was like, what is art? And it ended up turning into like an hour-long conversation of just like defining terms. And we were like building an equation of like, okay, art is like time plus effort plus skill times this. And it's like, and this is where this is more artistic than that. And I mean, just like really, it's all about like really understanding what the other person really thinks about this thing and like defining terms and getting to the nitty gritty. It'd probably be so boring for most people to be listening with how nitty gritty we get with some of it, but I enjoy it.
What you said right there reminded me of that movie, The Dead Poets Society, where the Dr. Pritchett's way of calculating a good poem from a bad poem, and he had the bar graph and all that, and they were told to like rip it out of the book because it was all bullshit.
Oh, that's cool. I have never seen that.
Oh, you never saw that movie? Oh, it's a great movie, man. It's a depressing movie, especially knowing that Robin Williams is not around anymore, but
that was good. That was on my you've never seen it list, and then I finally watched it and I think everyone was right to be worried that I haven't seen it. It was really good.
Okay, I got to put that on my list then.
Definitely a good one. Yeah, I mean, that your routine sounds very standard. I mean, but I'm going to get back. I want to ask you about the breakfast thing because it's really bothering me that you don't eat breakfast because I want you to be healthy, Chris. What do you eat? Like when you got to be hungry, right? Like when you start to work, you're hungry.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, my stomach is starting to growl now, but that's for lunch. I mean, I eat, you know, we do lunch and I do a snack after work and then dinner, but yeah, I don't even consider breakfast.
What time do you eat dinner?
Like 9:30 at night.
Oh, so there you go. So actually I will give you a tip, and this is, you know, I'm like the least qualified person to give advice about nutrition, but they do say if you eat, it's bad to eat dinner at night. Well, in your case, you go to bed pretty late, though, don't you?
I'm not falling asleep until like 1:30.
Okay, then that's enough time. But if you were going to bed at like 10:30 and eating at 9:30, that's bad.
No, that's definitely good. Well, and even eating earlier is good. And it's supposed to be like the more smaller meals you eat throughout the day, the better it is. So like one giant meal is worse than three reasonable meals, which is worse than six like half meals.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just keep your metabolism going by kind of, you know, have a piece of fruit and a couple hours, you know, an hour or two later, a granola bar, and a little bit later, maybe some pasta, whatever.
But I am like the most, I live by my meal schedule. Like that's pretty much, and you guys know that about me. Like I'll bitch if it's lunchtime and we're not eating. And that to me is, I'm always fascinated by people that have these like completely different meal times than me. And just cause I just get grumpy, man. If I miss a meal or like I'm, you know, on Mondays when we don't get done with the podcast for a while, like I am like, don't talk to me until I have my lunch because I got to eat some food.
What do they call that? Yeah.
What's that? Hangry?
They call that hangry, right?
Yeah. Hangry. I think I'm definitely that dude.
I'm almost completely the opposite where like if I'm engaged on something, like I can go for so long without even thinking about food. Like if I kind of get in the zone on a project, it could be like 12 hours later. It's like, I really should probably eat something. I don't feel hungry, but I should eat something. So,
oh, man. Yeah, I'd pass out. Couldn't deal. All right, Nick, what do you got, buddy?
I love hearing everybody else's because I think it is always a fit to an individual person. And I think these things are so interesting to me because we are all different and we all have this thing. So for me personally, I see this like a personal science experiment for like optimizing my morning and doing the right things in the first half an hour to an hour so that the rest of my day, I don't have to worry about how to stay engaged and how to stay energetic and how to stay passionate and all these things. And I feel like every time I dial in this first hour and do it right and do more things that I should be doing in that first hour, that I do tend to have a better day. And I track things. I track things with my watch. I track things on some apps and say, like, what did I do? And then how do I feel? So for me, I treat it like a science experiment and like a thing to test. But I also understand that it's different for every person. So every time I get a piece of advice, and I guess this is true with everything, with design and 3D and whatever, whenever I hear a new piece of advice, I'm always open to go like, well, I'm just going to go try that for a while and see if it works. And if it doesn't work for me, I throw it out. I just stop doing it. But there is a list of things that I try to do every day. I don't always get to them every day. Sometimes I run out of time. Sometimes there's a meeting I have to be at. Sometimes I'm in a new place where I can't do these things. I've been traveling a lot, so that sometimes that's helpful because I have more freedom time in the morning, but I also don't have some of the tools that I have. So let me get into some of these things that I always try to do. And also understand that I mostly fail at this all the time. But the more things I do on this list, it tends to help me be more energetic and lately more clear-headed when I do these things. So first one is make the bed. This is something I haven't done in a long, like as a kid, I hated making my bed. I'd never done it. And when I got married, my wife, my charming, charming, energetic in the morning wife, which I tend to be a little bit more grumpy in the morning. She's like, first thing right out of bed, make the bed. I'm like, what? Why? Like, what? Why are we doing this? Like, we're just going to and mess it up later. It's like, why is this a thing? And I found that over time, like I actually sometimes still begrudgingly, but I feel like I did something. Like I instantly feel like I woke up and I did something like good for the world and good for me and good for my family and good for, and it's really interesting, but it does help. And in fact, I can't show you the book because I literally like my stack of books is holding my laptop up right now. But at the bottom of it is the biggest one of the bunch right now is Tim Ferriss's Tools of Titans. And I was just reading this actually yesterday. And there was a section of it on his morning routine of things that he's learned over the years. And the first thing he does is make the bed as well. And I just thought, I was like, that's pretty cool. Okay, so next one is usually I turn on some music. So I'm with you, Chad. I crank some music. Lately, it's been instrumental kind of dance music stuff, EDM, instrumental, almost like chill, laid back kind of stuff. So I turn that on. I have at home, I use the Sonos stuff and crank it in the bathroom and start getting ready. I do push-ups and then a cold shower. And those are together for a reason. I think I've told my cold shower story before, so I'll spare you with that. But years ago, I was forced to take a cold shower. And at the end of that cold shower, the heater was out. I wasn't forced by a gunpoint or anything. the heat was out. I took a cold shower and I felt way better that day. So I tried it again the next day, even after the heat was fixed. And for me, it wakes me up. I'm such a grumpy butt in the morning, and I'm such a like sluggish, like check my phone person in the morning. And when I, right after I take that cold shower, I feel awesome. Problem with the cold shower is it sucks. Cold showers like still take my breath away, and they're like, they make me anxious to even think about it. So to fight that, what I started doing is working out, not a lot, but just doing some push-ups or something to make me sweat a little bit right before I get in the shower. So I try to do as many push-ups as I can and just do them until my arms give out and I can't do one more. And then I try to do one more and I hit the ground and then I get in the shower. Take a cold shower and then iced coffee. Can't live without my iced coffee. I wish I could reach into the fridge and show you the stuff I found, this concentrate bottle I've been obsessed with to make, like, so you could just bring it with you, have iced coffee anywhere. And then breakfast. I try to eat breakfast every morning. It seems to like fill me up enough. I don't eat lunch usually. Sometimes I'll have a small snack, but I try to eat a big breakfast and then a big dinner and just kind of skip through lunch. And when I do those things, when I check more of those boxes off, I tend to feel more awake, more energetic. Like when I don't have time to do my push-ups, I feel like the cold shower, I do it shorter. Like I'm not in the cold shower longer because I didn't do my push-up. Everything spirals if I don't do more of these things. So that's like a regular day. In the last year, I've experimented with meditation. I think I have, as you guys could tell by me talking, like I have a very like manic mind sometimes, and I can't sometimes get out of my head what's like jumbled up and spaghetti in here. I feel that's something I haven't really tested very clearly with. Like I don't see the direct output from meditation yet. It calms me down for like 10 minutes, but I feel like I'm just as anxious when I come out of it. So there's something I need to learn from there. Maybe it's just not for me, but I have been experimenting with that. And I've also been experimenting with journaling, which everybody says like has helped them be more successful, get more stuff done, and write stuff down like literally before they get started in the day. That also, I haven't seen the huge benefits on that yet, but it is something I'm experimenting with. So I see this as an experiment to try out the beginning of my day so that the rest of my day I am free to like do the stuff that you know, that excites me. So I don't know. I feel like there's a lot there, but
The only thing that there's two things that, number one, I don't make my bed. I probably should. And we just never have. I don't know why. It's just not, I don't know. I like having a bed made. I just don't like making it. But I get what you're saying though, that I feel like I probably would feel that same sense of accomplishment if I actually did that. And that's a small little thing that you can do. The cold shower thing, I will never understand that, man. That is all you, baby. Like I could never in a million years jump into a cold shower. I would just probably curl up into a ball before I was able to do that. But
well, and I'll give everybody this tip too. I rarely do I just get directly into a cold shower. Especially if I don't have time to do push-ups or work out and all those kind of things, I'll do like a regular hot shower, like scrub it up, whatever.
So you just take a regular shower and then you just turn it cold.
Yep. And then at the end, I try you. What you want to do scientifically is at least 30 seconds. Minute is even better. Mine are way closer to 30 seconds. And what I do is I'll get really warm and I'll actually even make it too hot. You know how like 2 degrees matter in a shower sometimes? You're just like, it's perfect. Go like too hot and almost feel like almost it hurts a little bit, and your body will actually like crave a little bit of cold. And then just like you're jumping in a lake and like you have no other way, like gravity is just gonna pull you into this cold lake. Just crank it cold and sit there. And what I do,
gravity is gonna pull you into a cold lake.
It's
Nick's psyche right there.
But listen, like if you're standing at the edge of a cold lake and you're about to jump in, as you do in Michigan, your mind is like, this is going to be cold. This is going to be cold. And all the worry is way worse than like the split second of being cold. And then once you're in, and almost everybody I think has had this experience, once you're in the cold lake, you're like, takes your breath away for a second. And then you're like, wow, okay, I'm stabilized. And the cold shower feeling is the same way. The first 10 seconds are the worst. So I start with it in my head and I literally think, I imagine myself jumping into a lake. This is like no joke. I close my eyes, the water hits it, super cold, and I feel like I'm not in a shower right now where I'm in control. I'm out in nature where this is refreshing or something. So once I'm past that point, I do a little spin, try to get the water all over the place. And then I do it on the top of my back, which just as I read is like the quickest way to get that cold feeling into your body. It's like one of the best places. So I just literally let it hit the back of my neck, like the back below the back of my neck. And I stand there for 30 seconds. And since I don't have a timer in the shower, I just like kind of count, or I'll do like a physical thing, like lift my legs to like count it off and just try to get 30 seconds. And honestly, by then it's a little bit more chill. And then you turn it off and you move on. And then honestly, I feel like I can like rip a phone book in half after a shower like that.
The thought of that like reminds me, I don't know if you guys ever did this, but if you were as a kid, like on vacation, staying at like a Holiday Inn or something, and they had like a hot tub next to the regular pool. Yeah. Like that was always the funnest thing, is like, oh, let's get in the hot tub and like then we'll go jump and see who's, you know, we'll jump in the pool first, and your capillaries and your pores just like open and close like super fast.
So I love that analogy too, because the people out there doing the science on this, on why this stuff works, like every big athlete now does cold tanks after workouts and all this stuff. Like it's a training thing that's happening globally right now with high performing athletes. And the people that are studying this stuff are finding that going between a sauna, like a really hot sauna, and then a cold bath over and over again actually helps this process. And what they say is it's actually a healing process for athletes that are like pushing their body really heavily. The swelling takes, like the swelling goes down. Like Chris, you may want to try this after the ski trip, you know, your little aches, those things like fix themselves quicker. And you basically are like stressing your body out in a way. It's almost like you're working your skin out. You know what I mean? So I'm obsessed with these weird things, because I think as a human system that we're just unaware of all the things that we can do to our own body to change it. And I like experimenting on myself with that stuff. So if you guys have any ideas, man, let me know. And anybody that's thinking in the back of their head, I'm going to try that cold shower, dude, do it and let me know what you feel. Do it for 30 seconds and then let me know how the next like 2 hours of your day is. Cause man, I honestly, today was great. The water in the showers at this room were like another 15 to 20 degrees colder than at my own house. Like they were like, they felt like they were below freezing, which I understand is physically impossible. It was very cold.
There's literally snow coming out of the shower.
There's snow coming out, melting on me. And I just felt like, dude, I was eating breakfast. Like I'm gonna kill this day. It's gonna be amazing.
Would you ever do a polar challenge? What do they call it? The polar bear.
I would love to do that. Every time that happened in Chicago, I always found out about it like on the news at night. And I'm like, oh, I missed it again. Like,
and you've been training all this time.
Been training.
Yeah, dude, you're ready.
I'm ready.
It's just a matter of like, well, right now it's probably not really much of a challenge because it's pretty warm here. But
you know what I am going to find on this trip? It's one of my things on my road trip I'm literally looking out for is there's places we can go and do the cold bath. Like they have basically, think of a hot tub, but opposite. Like they are cooling it down to 36 degrees or something like that. And then you go in it for a certain amount of time and then you do the hot stuff and you actually go back and forth. So I could go try to find one of these places and really do the super cold ones. I want to see how much harder that is. I feel it's going to be way colder where it's
imagine it's like putting your hand in a cooler of beer where you're like, ah,
dude,
it's about all I can handle.
Actually, yeah, that'll be later today.
All right. So I have two main questions about the routines. And I just want to get your guys' opinion on both of you have like coffee built into that routine. And a lot of people, like, I mean, I'm pretty rare in that I don't drink coffee, and I've tasted it and tried it occasionally, but like I intentionally don't have coffee be any part of my routine just because I know so many people who are like don't even talk to me in the morning until I have my coffee, or they're just, their day is ruined if they don't have coffee, and they're upset that the coffee's burnt and this coffee's not ready. And it just sounds like such a hassle to be dealing and dependent on coffee. And for me, it's always been like, no, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to get my cup of water and I'm going to be happy for the day. And I don't get maybe that high from coffee.
Chris lives like a prisoner.
I just feel like there's this built-in roller. Like, you, when you start drinking coffee as a regular part of your routine, you're setting yourself up for like a daily roller coaster of like, you wake up and you're slow and you're grumpy, and then you get your coffee and you're like, oh, I'm awake and I'm happy, I'm doing these things. And then you're just all through the day.
It's not really like that though, because I think that there probably are people out there that are more of like a roller coaster or whatnot. But for me, if I get up in the morning and I don't have my coffee, it's not because I need that coffee to like wake me up and like, oh, that caffeine, you know. For me, it's just like, it's such an enjoyable thing. Like, I look forward to that taste in the morning and the warmth, and just like, it's just a, it becomes like more of like a, like, even if it was tea, it'd be the same thing. It's like a way to start your day. It's a routine, I guess, is the best word to put it. And it's not for like I'm looking for that caffeine jolt, because I think once you've introduced coffee into your system for a long period of time, years, drinking it in the morning or whatnot, caffeine's effect kind of diminishes quite a bit, which is why a lot of people switch to espresso, or they do, the cold brew, which is, I think, brewed twice. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's not about the caffeine. I do it because of the taste, and I like the way that it becomes a way to start my day. It's just like anything else. It's just like your water, you know. I'm not doing it
as an observation, I would say, and I was experiencing this even on the ski trip, where people don't want coffee. They need coffee. They don't say, hey, I want to go grab a coffee. They say, hey, I need to go get some coffee. I feel like it's even built like right into the language of it, of like, it sounds like you're doing it a little bit more casually, but how about you, Nick?
It's definitely something I've experimented with. There was definitely a time where I drank way too much caffeine, way too much coffee, and I stopped for a week, and I felt mostly the same like energy and mostly the same like, you know, passion. Like I don't need it to wake up, but I come kind of like with Chad, where it's like during the day, coffee and morning coffee is like such a like happy moment. Like I love really good iced coffee, and I love really good iced coffee by day and really good whiskey and beer at night. Like that's just, I enjoy these things, you know? So I will say that I recently, maybe it's just an age thing, I recently have noticed if I have like two large iced coffees, I'm kind of, my brain is scrambled. Like it's almost worse. So I have been experimenting with like lowering my caffeine intake, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean, Chris. Like I've seen the culture of like needing the coffee, and I'm picturing like the grandma with her cup of coffee, like cartoon, you know. But to me, and maybe people can explain this in the comments, because I'm with you. Like if all of a sudden there was no coffee, or if it was bad coffee or whatever, that ultimately doesn't affect my day hugely, but it is something I enjoy. So for me, I almost think it's almost like the reason people talk a lot about it is because it's something people talk a lot about. So for me, it's almost like talking about sports or talking about the weather. It's talking about coffee in the morning. It's like it's a social way to like talk about the world when you don't know somebody very well. So if everybody is waking up in a room together and they don't know what to talk about, I think they talk about their coffee habits and where in a way it's perceived as a higher importance than it really is.
Hmm. Okay.
So no, at least
I need it. I'm in a need position.
You need it.
I need it. If nothing else, then just for the routine and I need it, man. If I went somewhere, like if I went like on this ski thing or whatever, and we woke up and there was no coffee in the room, my job would be to find coffee.
you'd be in the car.
I'd be like, we got to go. I don't care if it's Dunkin' Donuts. I don't care if it's, you know, whatever. I need a hot cup of coffee in the morning. It's not, again, it's not necessarily the caffeine, because sometimes I only drink one cup. It's just more of a habit, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, there's something here, Chris. See, this is the other podcast. We need the toothpaste podcast, then the coffee podcast.
Oh, man.
Are we already talking about movie reviews? We got a lot of podcasts working.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I wish that I were more of a coffee connoisseur than I am.
I tell you what, our meeting, you were making that, what's the name of that jar?
The Chemex. I made you a Chemex.
You were making a mean Chemex, man. Let me just tell you. We were at our friend's office, and they have the most amazing coffee setup. And Chad's like, oh, I got this. He's grinding it and pouring over and waiting for the bloom and the whole situation. So I'd like to have Chad make my coffee in the morning. Can we get that set up?
Ironically, at home, we just do a regular – and Tracy is the one that makes the coffee. I don't even make the coffee. But as like if it's in a, like if it's during the day and I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't had a Chemex in a while – I'm going to go downstairs and make myself a Chemex. It's like a process for me. And I enjoyed making you a coffee because I don't know how to cook and I'm not good at that, but I find like I can do coffee because it's kind of almost like chemistry in a way. And I feel like if I do everything right, I can make a really good cup of coffee for someone and I enjoy watching them enjoy it, I guess. But yeah, if you're ever around and you got a Chemex handy, I'll make you a cup.
Chad's a man.
I'm your guy.
Well, Chris, to maybe wrap this up too, like you drink iced tea. Is there any amount of like caffeine? Does caffeine play into your iced tea drinking?
I would say probably not, because I'm very inconsistent with the iced tea, where like I'll be in the mood and I'll make this giant pot of it and I've got like a week's worth of iced tea, but then, you know, a month could go by without me making any more. So like it's just a beverage to have in the refrigerator. And I, you know, I don't drink any soda, and that's just more for like not having sugar intake. Like if I worked out more, maybe I could drink more soda, but you know, kind of compensates.
So you don't notice any caffeine like buzz, or have you ever experienced anything like that? Like let's say you had three of them.
In college, we were obsessed. Me and my group of friends were, you know, we're in the labs all day. We're doing like, we're, you know, we're doing animation, we're doing stop motion animation, we're lab aides, we're just in the computer all the time playing video games, watching movies. And we could go downstairs to the cafeteria and they had all those Sobe drinks, like the glass Sobes. So it was like four times a day we'd go down. It's like, oh, Sobe run, and we all go down and we all get Sobes. And they had all those different varieties. And for a while, I was drinking the triple ginseng tea, and it was just really good. And then there was a point where there was a day where, you know, whatever the case was, but there was a time when I didn't get it, and I like actively got a headache, and I was like, and I, you know, I'm actually pretty good at like what am I in the? I'll just be like, what am I in the mood for, like food wise, and I almost always have an answer for that. Like this sounds good, and I don't know if it's true, but I'm just assuming like that sounds good because my body knows that that will give me the things I'm kind of looking for. So in that moment of being like, oh man, I get this headache. And like, and it's like, and I, my brain's going to like the tea. It's like, oh my God, like I've got like a small chemical dependence to this triple ginseng tea. And so I immediately, and as soon as I realized that, cause I don't like addiction stuff. So as soon as that was a thing, I immediately like cut back on it and stopped drinking that. So I love
addiction stuff. That's my favorite stuff.
Addictions are great, man. You need at least one or two good addictions. Don't touch coffee, buddy. It's a wormhole.
Yeah.
It's a gateway drink.
It's a delicious, warm or cold, chocolatey, no calorie wormhole. It's so good.
It is so good.
It's dangerous, man. I don't know this. I feel like I would have a fairly addictive personality. So this might just be me naturally compensating for it. Like I have to intellectually keep it out of my, you know, out of arm's length, and then I don't have to worry about it.
That's good. Self-awareness, man.
You know your limits. That's good.
Well, that's the thing. When I find something I like, I mean, and I try to aim for fairly, you know, neutral, innocent type things, but like I will obsess over things. Like, oh my God, like I found like whatever, a piece of software. It's just like I want to play with this thing all the time. And I just, you know, will throw every waking minute. Like I said, I spend a lot of my a lot of my routine is squeezing minutes out of the day to put them where I want them to be. So like, I don't need to waste time in the morning routine. Let's just save that time and do something else. Like, that means I can stay up later and, you know, whatever, be reading a book or watching a movie or doing some video games or working on a project. So when I find something, like, I really dive in deep. So I feel like that would be the same thing.
Let's all put our heads together and find something for Chris to become addicted to. And then
I think he said it right, which he is. Like, he has these more like less chemical things, but more like intellectual things that he gets addicted to. And then he already has too many of them. Like that's how I heard it. Right.
Yeah. Let's find a chemical one then. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and then everybody listening, like, you guys know how fast I can go in tutorials, especially when I get excited about like the topic I'm on. Now imagine if I was on caffeine on top of that.
Can you imagine a Chris tutorial with like a quad shot espresso?
And then that might be then playing it back on YouTube two times fast. it'd be like, you can't, it'd be like a solid tone, the words.
There's something wrong with your tutorial, Chris. It's all white noise.
Yeah, I don't understand what's happening. You're just a blur.
That's just me on caffeine.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious. All right, so I think when we're all at NAB, I think I'm going to get Chris a double shot and see what, and I'm going to document what happens.
Maybe we should like do that for like half res. When I do my half res presentation, I should like have a bunch of caffeine beforehand, just see what happens.
Just see, like up on stage. The experiment this year, Chris, is not to do a tutorial in version 6. It's to do a tutorial on as many stimulants as we could get into Chris before this time.
How many does it take before his hand literally can't hold the mouse?
5 minutes later, I'm done. That's all I got. See you guys.
That was great. All right. See you next time.
Well, maybe we should wrap up as well. And for those of you waiting for half-res stuff, that reminds me, those are coming out in March. Might be a little bit later March, but keep an eye out for the half-res recordings, which are some pretty fun ones with Beeple and Andrew Kramer and Chad Ashley from Grayskull Gorilla and Chris.
Mm-hmm. From you may remember us from such tutorials as
The coffee bean tutorial and the hydraulic arm.
Oh, and our buddies Nick and Eric, their presentation was really, really cool about starting their own company. So look for those pretty soon. I just want to sneak that in there because I know we get a lot of questions about that. And before we wrap up, Chad, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you guys have a morning routine thing or something about coffee or something we should try, I personally love experimenting with this stuff, and I will go try it. I'm the dummy that will go try whatever you put in the comments. So put it in there. I'll try it. And
oh, man.
You can report back.
I can report back. Let me tell you, the cold shower, working real well. The meditation so far, I can't do it. I can't do it yet, but I'm working. I'm working toward it.
I can't wait to see what everybody comes up with. I know I'm going to make a couple dummy accounts just so I can
watch me
put in some crazy stuff and see if Nick does it.
If you put your hand,
I'll laugh at him when he's done.
Just put your hand in a bowl of scorpions, and then you can work like crazy.
You just gotta drink scorpion. what do they call that? What do scorpions even have? Venom? I guess they do, right?
Scorpion. Yeah, I think it's venom. Venom,
right? Yeah.
We'll make a new brand of coffee, and we'll call it Scorpion Venom.
Oh, I love it. That's already a shirt. I can picture it in my head. Anyway, this is
great. Need a logo, Chad.
Alrighty. Working on it. Done. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Again, hit like and subscribe and give us a comment and all that fun stuff. And thank you all for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.